You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including feral cats, sheep herding dogs, and legal updates in Grants Pass. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Roma Battaglia, politics, environment, and sports reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Roman, you went down to Alturas, California for probably one of the cutest sporting events in existence, the National Sheepdog Finals. Tell us, what is this competition?
Yeah, it is one of the top competitions for sheep herding in the U.S. and Canada. So sheep herders will compete in all these other trials during the year to earn points. It's a handler and then their sheepdog, usually a border collie, but sometimes there's other breeds that work together essentially to herd sheep perfectly. And then the top 150 performers that year will get invited to this finals competition. It's a really cool sport. These dogs are really talented. They're really smart, and they're also very cute.
If you're a fan of the movie Babe, and just sheep herding, yeah, maybe go and watch. How do sheep dog trials work, actually?
Yeah, so there's a few different things that you have to do. It's different for different competitions. There are different layouts, but basically it's recreating stuff that a sheepdog would be doing on a real farm. These sheepdog trials started in the late 1800s. I think the first recorded one was in New Zealand, but it was kind of in, Australia, UK, place like that. So they release
places where there are lots and lots of sheep.
Lots of sheep, yeah. So they release a herd of sheep like around 500 yards away, like 5 football fields in the distance. And then the sheepdog will get released by their handler, and then they know instinctively to run in a giant semicircle to get behind the sheep, and then they have to herd the sheep in a straight line all the way back to the handler, all the way down those 500 yards. Once they get back, they herd them through a couple of other gates, and then they get them to this circle area where they have to, what's called shedding off 2 sheep, where they have to basically split off 2 of the sheep away from the other sheep. And then they have to herd them into a small pen, which can be really difficult because the sheep don't like being, scared
penned
or penned up or, claustrophobic. So they try and run away. So it's a lot harder than it sounds. The sheep are really feisty. They don't like to do what they're told. Sometimes they want to try and fight the dogs because a lot of these sheep have never met dogs before. And plus, it all has to be perfect. You only have 15 minutes to complete everything. You get a max of 200 points, 100 points per judge in the preliminary round. And then you basically get points removed for not being perfect. You have to keep, when you're driving those sheep, you keep them in a line, perfectly straight. And that can be really hard because the sheep kind of go everywhere.
Yeah. They can be wily. What did you learn while at this competition?
Yeah, I learned a lot about sheepdogs. I didn't know a lot about this competition.
And that they're very good boys and girls, right?
Yeah. The only thing I knew was from watching Babe as a kid, which is very different because Babe could talk to the sheep and tell them what to do. And these sheepdogs, they can't talk to the sheep necessarily. I mean, as far as we know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they can. But they do have some sort of connection with the sheep. These sheepdogs border collies use this like stare where they stare down the sheep and they're trying to basically force the sheep to do what they want them to do. It's still very different. I also learned that the sport is changing a lot. There's a big increase, in years in hobbyists, people who are doing it for fun. Their dogs aren't necessarily working on a farm. In the past, it was basically almost all people who had working ranches that competed in these trials. And now a lot of people just have, a small herd of sheep just to train their dogs on for these competitions. So, it's harder to source sheep now to do these competitions. A lot of people are, less people are eating lamb. I've done stories in the past about wool mills in Humboldt County where, we talked about how there's...
Roving sheep reporter.
Yeah, it's difficult to source sheep. There's just less sheep in the U.S. and Canada and the U.K. and places like that. So, but these people are really committed to this sport. They say it's super addicting. Here's Joni Titchen, who came from Clearmont, Wyoming.
My mom, though, she said the whole time that I was putting so many hours into the dog, she'd say, just think what you could be if you put that much time into something else, like women's golf or something. I said, yeah, but I love the sport and I love the dogs, so that's been my passion for a lot of years. Yeah.
So they really love, and you could hear the dog panting the entire time. He was literally hugging her the whole time we were talking. So all these handlers are really into these sheepdogs, and the dogs love it too. So it was just really fun to see all that.
Yeah. Well, the competition's over for this year, but, you know, as many people say about their favorite sports teams, there's always next year, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be back here in Alturas in Northeast California next year. And that was part of the reason why I went down there, so I could, you know, say, here's the sheepdog competition. You can come back, though. You know, it was going to be in Colorado this year, but the person who was organizing it there wanted to train for this World Sheepdog Trials that's coming up next year. So the organizer here said, you know, I'll do it here. So they got a lot of positive feedback about the location this year at this ranch. They're hoping to have it at the same place, but, you know, are hoping the owners aren't worried about having everything taken over again for next year. So, you know, but it'll be down there. You can go next year if you want to see these dogs. They're very cute and they're very, very talented. It's really amazing what they can do.
Okay. Well, Jane, you wrote a story about a lawsuit being settled against the Grants Pass School Board. We're moving away from cute stuff now.
We are.
What was that lawsuit about?
So it's a different vein than Roman's story. I did a story about two staff members that were fired years ago from the Grants Pass School District. They had been an assistant middle school principal and a middle school health and science teacher, and they were fired after they posted a video online that was called I Resolve Movement, Response to Gender Identity Politics. And in that video, they discussed some proposals regarding transgender students' pronouns and name changes and bathroom access at school. So their I Resolve Movement website includes things like relabeling the bathrooms as anatomical male and anatomical female, or stipulating that students and staff can't be mandated to call students by their preferred names and pronouns. They can only be given the choice to. So the district says they got a lot of complaints over that video. Some people considered those things transphobic, and those two women were fired. And then they sued the district, saying that their rights to free speech and religious freedom were being violated. They're both since reinstated, but the case has been ongoing for years. So the district court judge had dismissed it back in 2023. They then appealed up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who this summer basically agreed with parts of the previous ruling and disagreed with some parts of it and sent it back to the lower court. And then the district recently settled it.
Okay, well, so is the lawsuit over now?
It sounds like it. So the school board voted last Thursday to settle the lawsuit. The details weren't available, so I'm still looking for more information about what exactly is in that settlement. I don't know how much it's for. The Grants Pass Daily Courier has reported that as part of the settlement, one of these women was asked to submit her resignation. I haven't been able to confirm that, but they've reported that, so that might be part of it. Sounds like it's part of the settlement. The lawyer for the two women said they were going to send me a statement this week, but they didn't, so I haven't been able to talk to them. I did speak to the school board rep on Monday, who basically said the agreement hasn't been finalized yet, so the district is unable to provide additional information. So we're looking for some more information on what exactly is in the settlement.
Well, this comes at an interesting time when other school employees are being let go for social media posts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been happening more recently. In connection with the assassination of Charlie Kirk last month, who is a conservative political activist. In California, the school board of the Pacheco Union School District in Redding has voted to begin the termination process for a staff member who made a social media post about Kirk's death. And then in Oregon, we know there's a teacher's aide who's no longer employed by the Central Point School District. The Rogue Valley Times had reported that the staff member had posted on social media that she felt no sympathy for Kirk following his assassination, so that person's no longer employed there. And then at the Brookings Harbor School District, the high school principal had resigned after the district said an employee's family member made a personal statement. The district said there was some disturbing commentary circulating in the community and threatening language toward the district and school leadership. They didn't say whether or not it mentioned Kirk, but that would be my guess just based on the time frame and some of the statement from the district. So I did talk to Kelly Simon, who's with the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, who's worried about school employees being punished over something they said, you know, kind of like what happened with this I Resolve video. And she wants to make sure that schools are upholding the First Amendment obligations that their employees have. And she said we could potentially see more lawsuits over things like this.
And thanks, Jane. Justin, we've had dogs. You had a story about cat people in the Rogue Valley. What are these cat people up to? First, what is a cat person?
Well, they're people who take care of stray and feral cats, so they're not dressing up like cats.
Okay, it's not Halloween yet.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. But so the Rogue Valley has a growing feral cat population, I learned. And these cat people are usually taking care of cat colonies. That's what they call them, cat colonies. They're around the valley. And basically there's volunteers that go and feed and look after these cats. I went out with Diana Moissant early one morning to visit a large cat colony that she looks after in Medford. There's around 60 cats there, and that's just one of five of her colonies that she looks after.
And so what does she do for these cats?
She feeds them first. So she had a truck filled with cat food. She says they've become a little spoiled and prefer wet cat food now.
Oh.
Here's Moissant actually talking about her schedule.
On Monday through Friday, I feed probably about 120 daily. I get up at 4:30. I go to certain areas where I don't want people around. And on the weekends, I feed up to 200.
So, yeah, it's a big time commitment. You have to have a passion for cats, I think, to do this work. But she also captures kittens and tries to place them up for adoption in foster families. You know, most of the cats in these colonies, they're feral, which means they're domestic cat breeds, but they've never lived with humans. And so really, once they're adults, they wouldn't make good pets. That's also why it's hard to adopt these cats out from shelters. You can't just get a feral cat and drop it off at a shelter because they have nothing to do with them. But if you get a kitten, then that can work. They can make good pets. So she does that. She also does something called TNR, which stands for Trap, Neuter, Return, so she'll trap the cats. She'll take them to a vet on her own dime, neuter them, and then return them to the colony. And you can tell which ones have been spayed or neutered because they have just a tiny bit of their ear missing. It's called clipping. And so when she sees a cat that hasn't been clipped, she uses a wire animal trap to capture it and then hopefully bring it to a vet.
And then not everyone is in favor of this work. Is that right?
Right. So some accuse her, obviously, of enabling cat colonies, making the problem worse. She has some arguments against this. First, the feeding, she says, is a good idea, or else the cats would be hunting local wildlife. Also, it makes them a more healthy population, and so less likely to spread disease. You know, they're not eating from trash and things like that. But her main goal is to stabilize and shrink these populations through spaying and neutering. You know, without someone doing that, they would just keep growing. And, you know, cats can have several litters a year, actually. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, the number of stray animals has increased in the Rogue Valley. That's something you reported. Why is that?
Yeah, I spoke with someone at the Southern Oregon Humane Society, and they said they're at a pretty critical level of people trying to ditch their pets and also, you know, finding strays about. And a big reason is likely the rise in animal care costs. So, like everything, it's become more expensive to care for your pet. Vet costs have risen. There's also a nationwide shortage of vets, so it's hard to find. Food costs have increased. Also, a problem in the Rogue Valley is if you lose your housing, it can be hard to find an apartment that allows pets. So more people are just dumping their animals, really, because they don't have another option. And, you know, fewer animals are likely to get spayed and neutered because the price has increased. So really, the Rogue Valley kind of needs these volunteers who are spending their own time and money, in a lot of cases, going out and taking care of these cat populations because there's not a lot of alternatives right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin. We've had cats and dogs on this debrief, mass hysteria. but, you know, these are the kind of variety of stories we bring you. We bring you these hard-hitting, you know, stories about legal issues. We bring you kind of feel-good stories about a sheepdog competition. We bring you people trying to do good in the community. I think that's a variety that you get on JPR. And if that's something you value, we're in our fall fund drive right now, and we're encouraging people to give to JPR and help support the news that they value. Jane, how would a person go about giving to JPR?
Well, there's a couple ways you can do it. We're really trying to focus this fund drive on getting new contributors, new donors, also new sustainers, so you can have an automatic payment every month. That sustaining membership is really important for us. And if you're a current sustaining member, you can always increase your support. We really appreciate that. We're trying to make up for our loss in federal funding and also create a new long-term business model for the future so we can continue to do all this great work. But if you're listening and you'd like to donate, there are two ways to do that. You can call us at 888-552-6191. You can also go online and donate at ijpr.org/support.
And Roman, how long does it take to donate?
Not very long.
Just a few minutes out of your day, right?
Yeah, just a little bit out of your day, and it really goes a lot to show your support. I think that, you know, all the stories that we do, you know, we had some interesting stories about cats and dogs and stuff and some fun stuff, but I think what I always enjoy is that even though I might be doing a story that's about something fun like sheepdogs, I learned a lot about the community and, you know, learned about how the community is changing, and so you're learning things no matter what.
Well, thanks, Roman. And the number to call, 888-552-6191. That's, or go online, ijpr.org/support. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should be covering in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. Also, you can click the orange donate button there. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or your favorite podcast platform.